Hello, everyone. I'm John Melke, and it is a pleasure to welcome back to Parkside today, Anna Static, director of the UW Parkside Library. Anna, it's been a while, and I actually didn't interview you on your last visit to Parkside today, so it's almost like I'm not welcoming you back, but we're glad to have you here.
Oh, thank you so much.
The last time you were here on Parkside today, you talked about the Big Read, you talked about the Wisconsin Library Association awarding UW Parkside Library of the Year. Talk to us about some of those events, what went on in the fall semester, and how people reacted to some of those things, the Big Read and the award from the Library Association.
Well, the earlier of those two is the Library of the Year. We received that award in October of 2017, and the new library this year, I think it's Milton Public Library, received it in October of 2018.
Mm-hmm.
So for the 1 year, we were the Wisconsin Library Association Library of the Year, something we were incredibly proud of. That award takes into consideration really five things: collections, space, how well do you serve your patrons, how responsive are you, how satisfied is your staff, and then how do you collaborate with community and other library systems?
Mm-hmm.
So we answered really those five areas, I guess, for that year for the Wisconsin Library Association and received that award.
Mm-hmm. When people came into the library, did they ask you or your staff about the award?
We were asked about the award. In fact, we threw a little student party in which I learned that there's never enough cake if you give it away free to UW Parkside students. But in any case, we had
people
three...
People love free cake.
Yes, free cake and coffee. So three giant sheet cakes celebrating that, the Library of the Year. And students would come up to us and say, how did you win this? What does it mean? You know, how long are you Library of the Year? All kinds of things. It was a great event where we really talked to people.
Yeah. And tell us about the Big Read.
The Big Read this past year was incredibly successful. It was... centered around the book Station 11 by Emily St. John Mandel.
Mm-hmm.
And we got the author herself to come and speak on campus, which was the biggest event. It was held in the main stage theater. About 500 people attended. They asked questions until we had to cut it off. The author signed books for people who waited mm-hmm. in line. Really, she signed every book for every person waiting in line. It was fantastic. We gave away about 5,000 copies of the book.
Mm-hmm.
So really, the community got a chance to read a book that not everyone had heard of before.
Hmm.
It's a book about post-apocalyptic times. A giant flu epidemic decimates the population of the earth, and then this small group sort of has to adapt, and you watch the small group.
Mm-hmm.
It was fascinating. Brought up a lot of questions, had some great discussions about that book. It also gave us an opportunity to really reach out into the community with a bunch of different creative events. For instance, we work with local breweries, particularly Public Craft,
mm-hmm.
To hold book discussions there. We had a survival 5K on campus with a local running club. That was fun. And just any number of, you know, craft nights and book discussions with different themes, especially with our partners, Racine Public Library, Kenosha Public Library, and other businesses and departments on campus.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just a comprehensive month-long, you know, love fest for this book. It was really nice.
And it seems like the, and I want to talk about this a little bit more of how libraries are changing, because what I see here at Parkside is that the library is not just a place where you come to study or you come to read a book, but there's all these events that have been connected to the library, associated with the library. Is that something you're seeing not only here at Parkside, but throughout libraries in the state?
Oh, definitely. I think it's a trend. I think academic libraries are becoming more and more like public libraries in that they do those events. They reach out to as many different populations as they can. They have to keep more things in mind, I think, now than maybe you would 20 years ago in terms of technology and access and who can access it and, you know, are we drawing an audience, all those kind of things. And also it's become a value of the library to really participate in the initiatives and strategic goals of the university, like retention and recruitment of students. So where we might not have had mini golf 10 years ago in the library for orientation week, we have it now, or for welcome week, and different events like that.
Sure, you have the therapy dogs come in twice a year?
Twice a semester. Twice, so twice midterms a semester? And finals.
Right. And that's always popular to see the students want to come and get closer to the dogs, right?
Very popular. Sometimes up to 20 students are in the rooms with the dogs. We always have two dogs at one time for midterms and finals. We know those dogs on a first-name basis. Yeah, they're great.
Yeah. So as library director, take us a little bit through what are the things that you're thinking about in terms of making the library something that continues to be a valued resource, not just here on campus, but also in the community. How have things changed, and what does that maybe cause you to focus on some things a little differently than maybe a library director of a decade ago or two decades ago?
I think one of the things that's changed the most and that you might not see on the surface is position descriptions and what individual librarians do. Mm. So 20 years ago, you would have had someone in charge of library technology, which of course now is changing at an incredible pace along with all the technology in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You would have had a cataloger. You would have had reference people. But now, you know, we have new titles, like we have someone in charge of marketing. We have someone in charge of learning technology. You know, not that they don't do reference or instruction or they're not liaisons to departments, because they do all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
But we need someone on staff who really pays attention to developments in learning technology and communicates them to us and then can talk to faculty and see how the library and faculty can work together, mm-hmm. things like that. So I'd say that position descriptions really evolve. And because that skill set evolves, then what we can do as a library evolves too.
And so what are the things that I could use the cliche of what is it that keeps you up at night, but as a director of the library, what are you thinking about in terms of things that are important in your role, where it's like, okay, these are things I have to get done and these are challenges that you see?
I think staying relevant is one thing, mm-hmm. obviously, with position descriptions. And I really have a great staff, forward-looking, progressive, people who love to do what they do. Mm-hmm. And so it's not difficult for me because they bring those things in, 1,000 suggestions a day, not really, but a lot of suggestions, like we should do this, we should try this, maybe we should try working in this area. So I can't say it keeps me up at night, but that's what keeps us busy.
Yeah, right.
That kind of
right.
thing. The remodel of Wiley Hall that's going to happen over the next couple of years is going to be interesting, too, in terms of changing space and things like that. We're really excited about some of those changes, bringing computer labs into the library, bringing coffee into the library, all kinds of things. So that will be a new challenge in the next couple of years.
I want to get back to that, to the Wiley renovation and what that's going, how that's going to impact what goes on in the library, what you guys do. When you talk about the technology, and you see more and more books and reference material and information being available on the web, as students come in for studying or for getting that knowledge, how, and you mentioned before about staying relevant, how do you stay relevant for the students and for the community coming in?
A lot of it is paying attention to what students want and what other librarians are doing. But for instance, you would think, okay, ebooks are important now or are widespread and everyone uses them. The thing is, a lot of our students don't necessarily like ebooks, and sometimes they prefer print.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing what to provide in one medium and what to provide in another is important. For instance, reference. Reference is kind of an obvious electronic thing. I don't know many people who use an actual physical encyclopedia anymore, because there's so many possibilities online, and we subscribe to all kinds of different things that are reference materials. And make them available, not just on campus, but with a Parkside login from anywhere. Though community people could come into campus and use them on campus. It's generally how vendors control who can use, you know, licensed material.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, there's so many possibilities. There are other things you really sort of want in print, because people like to use them that way.
And I'll go back to, again, you know, let's go back in the way back machine to 20 or 30 years ago, when you'd walk into a library and the first thing you noticed was that it was quiet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right from the get-go, as soon as you're in the door. And today's library isn't necessarily that way. You come into the park, and not that there's a party going on all the time, but when you walk into the L1 level of the library, there's it's a little bit of a different feel. It's a little bit more vibrant, and that's a change, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. There's conversation going on the first floor, and in fact, we have three floors of the library that sort of have three sound levels, the first one being the most collaborative, you know, conversation level noise, the second floor having more study rooms and things like that. They're brief conversations, or groups are in reservable study rooms talking about whatever they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third floor is quiet, and students really care about how quiet that floor is. They'll, you know, text down to the front desk if somebody's opening something too loudly. You know,
oh.
Somebody's sharpening a pencil too loudly. They're like, this is supposed to be a silent floor. So they definitely need silent spaces. And,
yeah.
You know, there are times of a semester where a student really wants to do serious study in a silent atmosphere. And there are other times you need that collaborative environment. There's a lot of group projects assigned, especially just following the way people work today and the way professors will assign things. So you really have to provide that sort of diverse learning style capacity in a library.
Mm-hmm. When you look at, and the Parkside Library is an amazing space. It's probably the biggest library in southeastern Wisconsin.
Or, I wouldn't know square footage wise. I'd have to think about that. And for sure not UWM, so it depends how far you go. But
Yeah. What is it that, as from the community standpoint, what do you hear from people, not necessarily Parkside students or faculty or staff, but people from the community? What are they looking for when they come and visit our library?
We have a number of community users, individuals, for instance, who just come to use different resources, whatever we have on our computers, email, and different programs, different electronic resources. Like, for instance, we have Mango languages. There's 30 or 40 languages you can start learning from a beginner level. Community users could come in and use that. But also from the community, we have classes coming in. For instance, this semester we have classes from the Prairie School, we have classes from Harborside Academy coming in so that our librarians can teach them how to use different resources and things, or simply because their libraries maybe don't have a certain resource and they can use it here, that kind of thing. So they're also part of the community, they get a library card, they can use our resources almost like a Parkside student. I say almost because depending on your login information, there's certain electronic resources that are or aren't available to you.
Mm-hmm. So as a member of the community, they can come out to Parkside, they can find one of the metered spaces in either the Lot A east of the Student Center or Lot B west of the Rita Talent Pickin Regional Center for Arts and Humanities. I think I did that right. And come in and meet your staff and utilize the resources.
Yes. And in fact, they'll be given an individual login for that day. And be able to use internet resources on campus. One thing community members can do, too, is use our archives, and a lot of them do.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, for genealogical research, we have so many immigration papers and community history collections, things that are owned by the Wisconsin Historical Society, but that have been placed here specifically so people from this region can use them.
Mm-hmm. And prior to becoming library director, you directed the archives area.
Mm-hmm.
So does that give you a little different perspective on that area, because that's kind of where you started or where you came from here and at Parkside, and now moving up to library director? How do you interact with the archives now today?
I have to say I'm particularly sympathetic for the archives. You know, can't get away from that. Yeah, I loved working in the archives. I find it to be a really important and interesting resource. Yeah, it's enjoyable.
And when we're kind of getting back a little bit to some of the events that we talked about, the big read, and we talked about the Wisconsin Library Association and the award, what are some of the things coming up in 2019? What's going on in the library? What are some of the events you've got planned?
One of the characteristics of the big read is that in the last few years, different institutions around Racine and Kenosha have applied for it. So this year, Kenosha Public Library will have big read programming essentially for the month of March around the book Into the Beautiful North.
Mm.
And so we're planning programming with that. We have some book talks on campus. We have one at D.P. Wigley in Racine.
Mm-hmm.
We have one at Public Craft. We're doing a zine workshop at Public Craft also about immigration issues, about the book itself and just how to put together a zine.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be interesting. You could go to the UW Parkside website and look for those events.
Okay.
On the library webpage.
On the library webpage.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned both communities, Connecting and Racine, Connecting and Kenosha. Is it similar? Is it a little different working with each community? Do they each have their own kind of their own personality from your perspective?
Oh, definitely. Both library systems are just fantastic. In fact, it's amazing the kind of outreach that both Racine and Kenosha Public Libraries do in terms of holding like coding workshops, repair workshops, teaching students how to work with electronics, doing like rough readers and cat chats, those kind of things where they teach or have reluctant readers read to an animal instead of a person,
mm-hmm.
you know, so they develop their literary skills. You know, there's just an incredibly wide range of services that public libraries provide, and so each of them has strengths, but they each do it a phenomenal amount. Really supported by the community. They both have active foundations that support those efforts, and they really, you know, need to get a shout-out because they do a fantastic job.
Mm-hmm. When new students at Parkside come into the library, Is it like you can almost bet on the type of questions you're going to get or the things they're looking for? Does it vary?
Well, I have to say that top question is probably how do I print something? You know, so not necessarily a library question. And really, the library is the most used computer lab on campus. So it's something we really seriously have to address. You know, we need someone there, a student worker, the librarians who are circulating or on the ref desk, just who know enough about technology to be able to help those people because they definitely have tech questions.
Mm-hmm.
It really depends on what their high school experience or previous experience was, depending on the student their adult returning students to, who maybe have never experienced an academic library or even a great school library, really depending on the school system. So they don't know what's available to them in terms of help with their assignments. We have things like reserve a librarian where you can just go onto a librarian's calendar and find a half hour where you can talk to that person specifically one-on-one about your assignment, get some reference,
mm-hmm.
Things like that. You know, it's just really helpful. They don't know that those things exist or they might not even know how to find a book, all those things.
Right.
So they have all those questions.
Yeah. Well, as director of the library here, how much do you work with colleagues at libraries across the UW system or library directors at at other libraries throughout the state that in, you know, a city library, something like that? How much do you work together?
Actually quite a bit. One of the most useful things in the UW system are statewide groups of similar, how do I say, people with similar positions.
Hmm.
So there's mm-hmm. the Council of UW Libraries, that's all the library directors from around the state of the University of Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
We meet every other month. There's an executive council that meets monthly that just talks about issues. And that could be anything like getting together to get a better deal from vendors for electronic resources, which is incredibly important,
mm-hmm.
or just developing policy. What are we going to do with, we loan books to each other, obviously. You know, if we don't have a book, you can get a book from Eau Claire. It'll take 3 days, and it'll be here at Parkside, and you can check it out just like a Parkside book. Just policies, like how is that going to work? What happens if one is lost? You know, just all those things.
Yeah.
So we get together and talk about all those issues.
Interesting. And how have you picked up ideas from other libraries or some of those meetings or where you go, oh, that's a good idea. I can do that here at Parkside?
Definitely. For instance, one of the new things we're doing this semester is this liaison breakfast. So each academic librarian is a liaison to a number of academic departments. You know, one is for chemistry, one is for business, one is for history, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
What we would like is that faculty come to the library and learn more about what we can do for them in terms of giving classes in their course to their, you know, to their classes,
mm-hmm.
so that they learn how to do library research, how to cite things, all the library related things of their class. But we also do collection development, so how do we order books for specific areas of research or interest for
mm-hmm.
professors and students, that kind of thing. Like, what are all those services? What can we do for online? What can we do in terms of embedding ourselves into a instructional technology system, something like that?
Yeah.
So that idea for the liaison lunch actually came from one of our librarians who used to work at Oshkosh, UW Oshkosh. Like,
uh-huh.
We used to do this. We had this breakfast, and they would come, and yeah. So we picked that up, and we're starting it here just to see how it will work, and really because we want to develop a little more communication.
Right, right. Yeah. What from Anna's, Anna takes a look at the crystal ball and says, what does, and we'll, we are going to get back to the Wiley Project, but putting the Wiley Project aside for just a second, what does the library look like 5 or 10 years from now? It's changed so much. Maybe in the last, in that last period of time, what happens in the next decade?
I am almost speechless. What would I think? what will I think will happen in 5 years? I mean, for sure, electronic access is going to increase. Our budget for electronic resources is going up and up and up compared to print and things like that. And authors are putting their words into electronic media just more often because they know that that access is there. So that trend, I'm sure, continues. We're going to have to make more computers available to students. Every year, we have checked out more and more laptops, and every year, we've had to buy more because the number of students who want laptops that are portable, take them around the library, do whatever, increases. And it's something that libraries have to take a look at. You know, not every student will have the ability to access our electronic resources or even their own class materials if they don't have internet at home, if they don't have that kind of equipment. And we can't necessarily expect that everyone will.
Right.
So we need to provide a way that students can get that. And that provision will just continue to increase, I think.
Yeah.
So in terms of technology, that would be it. I really don't know what to say.
Do you ever see a day when, and you talked a little bit about the person who may prefer to read something in print versus reading it on a, you know, tablet or whatever. Do you ever see a day where there's just not very many books in a library anymore? Or will there always be that that desire for the printed piece?
I'd hate to go on record with this bet, but if I personally had to say, I would say that most books, just for pleasure reading and things like that, will tend to stay in print. I think if people like to take a book, you know, take it on a bus, take it on a train, take it to their favorite place, wherever in some park, and read it without thinking about the electronics of it, or they don't want to stare at a screen all day. I think right. There are times you really just want to read print. Yeah. In terms of reference or academic resources, I imagine those will be more and more electronic. And the thing is, people will ask why there are books in libraries now. It's just one of those questions you get sometimes. Just, you know, when you're out talking to people and telling them what you do. But the thing is, it's not like we're going to go and digitize everything retrospectively. There are projects that have tried that and are working on it more and more, but obviously the full volume of things is hard to digitize. It costs a lot. You have to store it. You have to provide access. So it's not like the books that exist now will necessarily go away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there'll be quite a bit of lag time.
Yeah, yeah. Do you worry about, from a technology standpoint, being able to access information, like, you know, if somebody today is holding on to one of the old floppy disks, it's like, where am I going to find the machine to be able to get the information that's on that floppy disk? Or if I've got the old beta tape at home of whatever, how are you able to make sure that the information you have is continually accessible with the changes in technology?
Well, with the exception of things in the archives, which we have and sometimes only have one copy of, we have to pay attention to what kind of media they are. You know, are they floppy disks? Can we convert them? Everything we have now that's on floppies is converted and is sitting on a server. You know,
right.
Everything else that's just general knowledge is probably accessed anyway from the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like we own. I mean, with the exception of a few VHS tapes that we'd kind of like to get rid of, we don't own a lot of obsolete media for technology right now.
Right.
But yeah, it's a concern in archives, but something that archivists have been paying attention to for a long time. Some of those old media are really interesting, though, like wire recordings, copper wire recordings, sound recordings. They look like just wire coils. I've seen them, wax cylinders, you know, the really old recording things. But they're fun as artifacts. I wouldn't suggest storing any sensitive data on them right now, you know, of course.
Yeah. Wiley Hall is scheduled for a very exciting renovation, which, if things continue to go according to plan, will probably begin sometime in early 2020 and complete by the beginning of the fall semester in 2021. a lot of what's being planned at the moment impacts the library.
Mm-hmm.
So as library director, knowing that this construction is coming up where they're looking at some of the infrastructure in terms of heating and chilling and water and electricity, how are you starting to plan for what will be a fairly significant change in the library, you know, the physical aspect of the library as it is today?
Well, for one, I have a lot of confidence in the architects and in the people who are working on it, because just talking to those people, they seem to have a really strong plan for that transition, like where they're going to move people to, when they're going to work on a project, how they're going to isolate things. So mm-hmm. I feel pretty confident about that. I was also really happy to know that the architects pay a lot of attention to, like, current HVAC systems and things like that that will be improved in the library and the archives, and I can only applaud that. That's going to be really good for us and for the students.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the transition, I've always just said it's kind of like when you redo the floors in your house. It's just going to be a mess for a while, but something great is happening. And, you know, just like any construction, we're going to have to be prepared to do what we can, you know.
Right.
And really be able to sort of change our attitude or change our way of working on the spot when things happen. You know, if today there's no electricity, that could happen. You know, if tomorrow there's no water in the library, that could happen. So we'll just have to stay on our toes and see what we can do. Thankfully, a lot of work we can actually do remotely. So if it had to be, we can, you know, talk to patrons from a distance, have, you know, librarians, you know, work from home or something like that temporarily just to meet those needs.
Do you have to make any plans for offsite storage of resources at this point, or don't you know?
I am not the one you would talk to. So it really depends on how they're going to do it. I know they're going to move some things from the archives, whether that can be from one room into another or whether that has to be somewhere else, I think isn't going to be determined until they know really the extent of, you know, breaking those things up. The same thing up in the library. I think they might have to move some stacks. I think they'd like to avoid moving stacks as much as possible.
Yeah.
So we'll play that one by ear.
And without giving too much away, because I, you know, maybe I shouldn't even be talking about this, but we'll go there anyway. When the architects did come in and showed us some of the images of what the library is going to look like, and you and I were sitting next to each other, and there was the image of along the west wall, which is now on the L1 level, just a glass wall, them opening that up and a coffee. And your reaction was very positive when you saw that.
Oh, yeah. It was very positive. I think students are going to love that. A lot of libraries, public and academic, have coffee bars and things like that with lounge space. And then that lounge space is, you know, technologically enhanced. You've got Wi-Fi and things. You can sit there and study like you're in Starbucks, but here you are in the middle of Parkside. That's good. I was really happy to see how they're dealing with library security, because that was a big question of mine. If you open up that wall, what are you going to do? But they've come up with some great solutions that I think are not only going to be effective, but they'll look really nice. So,
yeah,
you know, win-win.
Well, it'll be exciting. It's a project that is needed for the building, and it's in order to maintain the infrastructure of that, and hopefully it doesn't become too much of a problem for you and your staff, because you guys do a great job of having those resources available for the students, for the community. And in addition to that, you found time to come on Parkside today, and we appreciate that. We've been chatting with Anna Static, who's director of the UW Parkside Library. And Anna, thanks again for being with us.
Thanks so much.